You're listening to part one of an interview with MasterChef winner Kate Brax, hosted by the City Bible Forum, Brisbane.
Tell us another highlight.
Oh, look, there were so many highlights for me. I was someone who was very fortunate to be on the winning team for a lot of the team challenges, so I had some beautiful meals at some beautiful restaurants all around the country. But to be perfectly honest with you, my favourite episode was actually when my family came to visit. I was so longing to see them. I hadn't seen them for about a month, and I was desperate to see them. And when we heard that it was this family challenge, when the judges were telling us this challenge, in my head I thought, oh my goodness, Luke's going to be here, how amazing. You know, because you start to pick up on clues and stuff as soon as they start talking. And I just presumed each of us would have one person there. So when I turned around and saw that my entire family was there, my kids as well. I don't know if you watched the episode, but basically I just bawled my eyes out and ran. But for me it was, I think, because I'd been in there for so long, and then we had to, I guess I felt really privileged to have them there on set with me. It was an opportunity for them to see what my world was like. And we, to this day, still have a reference point. So where we're talking about it, the kids and Luke all know exactly what it's like. One of my favourite moments was, sorry, I'm there cooking and I'm having to do pork for Luke and fish and chips or something, chips and pizza for the kids. And I'm thinking, great, I've got to do two dishes, everyone else is doing one. And Maya is up on the balcony. She's my four-year-old. And she's standing there going, Ma? 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 And I'm like, what is it, Maya? And she said, Dad wants to tell you something. And I went, oh. But you know, that moment was that moment where I thought, I feel like I'm at home.
Yeah. Mum and MasterChef, too.
Collided.
So
big crash.
So Luke, your husband, yep. Mia, your youngest daughter.
Maya is four.
Maya.
Yep. And then I've got two other children. Erin is 9 and Liam is 7.
Yeah.
So, yeah, life's been pretty crazy. To be honest, I think when I entered MasterChef, I thought I'd be there for a couple of weeks. Kind of thinking, you know, well, Luke actually said to me, come on, it's a couple of weeks away. You get to see the inside workings of MasterChef, get a bit of time off from the family and the kids. You probably won't get any further anyway. But I agreed with you. I thought, I'll just be there for a couple of weeks and I'll come home. So, yeah,
now,
that was a tough part.
We should get cooking. I've got more questions.
Yes, okay.
Now, since I'm not a MasterChef and I put an apron on.
Okay. Right. Oh, you watch, by the end of the night, I'll be coming in stuff too.
Wow. So I've got a spare apron. It looks a little bit like a butcher's one.
Oh, that's all right.
I got this when I was 13.
You've been cooking a lot.
I grew up in a farming family, so if you walk through the kitchen, Mum gave you a job.
Excellent.
Boil the peas, mashed potato.
Yeah. My kitchen's a bit like that at the moment too. Yeah. I take the dishwasher, wash up the
food. It doesn't really quite MasterChef.
It's
not even iron.
Wisdom.
Let's go. All right.
So tonight I'm cooking two different dishes for you. This first one I'm going to do, I'm actually going to do a spiced lamb. And I'm just serving it with a very simple couscous and preserved lemon salad. The reason I've chosen this dish to show you tonight is because I think it's one of those really simple, quick-fix dinners. And I know a lot of you are working people in the city, and you probably need to come home and throw something together quickly. So it's one of those ones that's really, really simple. However, you can also dress it up and make it a bit more dinner party-y. I don't know if that's a word. Anyway, and it's got a few little tips in there that I'm hoping you'll be able to take something away from tonight with. So what we're going to do is basically do a spice rub on the lamb. Now, I'm a big fan of lamb. I grew up in a lamb family, really. My dad was a meat wholesaler and he specialised in lamb. So I've always loved it. But prior to MasterChef, I didn't really use spices all that much in my cooking. You know, the occasional cinnamon, nutmeg, maybe a bit of cumin, that was about it. And I think that's one of the lovely things I've enjoyed in MasterChef is being opened up to all these different flavour combinations and techniques and things I've learned. One of my favourite masterclasses was actually when Christine Manfield came on and she showed us about spice because I was really interested. And I actually now use spice even in desserts. There's one dessert I do that I do a spiced praline with a chocolate terrine, and chocolate and spice work beautifully. The Mexicans have done it for centuries. Anyway, the tip with spices is basically over a low heat. Now, when you're on a camp stove, can be a bit tricky, but we'll get that down as low as we can. And what I've got here is
Sorry, you say low heat as opposed to a lot of heat.
Yes, low heat. Yes. Christine Mansell explained that you should actually be able to put your hand on the pan and move as fast as with your hand. So you really are just gently warming them. And the reason that we do that is to bring the flavour out of them. So I've got coriander seed, I've got star anise, I've got cinnamon quill, that one's fennel, and cumin. Cumin apparently, apart from salt, which is actually a seasoning, not a spice, is actually one of the most commonly used spices in the world. So there you go.
There you go. And now I know how to pronounce it.
Well, cumin. That's how I pronounce it. I don't know. Some people say cumin, some people say cumin.
Okay.
I don't know. Who's cumin? Who says cumin?
Who says cumin?
Yeah,
no, the cumins win, though. The cumins win.
Right.
Tell me, were you, you know, I've learned that recently there's this special species of people called a foodie.
Yeah. You've only just heard about them?
Well,
years.
Have they really existed for years?
Yeah.
It seems like they've become this new species of human being where it's all about the food and about the sensuality of food and stuff. Were you a foodie before MasterChef?
Yeah, I think I've always... Well, I've always loved some types of food. As a child, I was actually a really fussy eater. Didn't like fruit, didn't like vegetables, didn't like meat. So my grandmother was tearing her hair out and laughs to this day where I am now. But I always loved cakes, biscuits, ice creams.
That's not being a foodie, that's being a child.
I loved food with a passion. But it was something... So what happened was when I first started cooking, that was what I cooked. I cooked cakes, I cooked biscuits, I cooked slices. But I fell in love with that kind of cooking. And I think as I grew and my palate matured and I started to become more adventurous, I just kept falling in love with more and more food. And a big change for me was actually when we moved to Orange 5.5 years ago, and suddenly I had this incredible local produce, because Orange is a very rich food-growing region. And so I had this amazing local produce right on my doorstep. So we grow apples, berries, stone fruit, cherries. Of course, there's lamb and beef, and there's wine, and there's just so much going on there. And so suddenly I had all this local produce on my doorstep. So I think it's something that's grown with me over time, and of course MasterChef added a bit more to that. I was a bit worried before I went in that it was going to kill my love of food. I thought, oh no, this could completely... wear me out, but it hasn't. It's had the opposite effect. I'm even more passionate about it than what I was.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, are you ever, kind of two questions for me, your mind spring out of that. How has it changed you? Like, it's, think the whole master's experience, how has it changed you? And it sounds like it's inflamed your passion for food. But also part of that, are you kind of tempted, I guess, to go down the foodie dream of, well, I don't know what the foodie dream is, but whatever it is, are you tempted by it? Is it Aria with Matt Moran? Is that a foodie dream?
Yeah, no.
Sorry,
I'm quite happy to go and eat at Aria. Not sure if I want to work.
Okay.
Just because the amount... For me, I have to be realistic. I'm a mum with young kids. And while... If I had no strings attached, yeah, I'd go and knock on Matt Moran's door and say, can I come and work with you? I think I would love it. But the reality is that it's not going to suit the stage of life that I'm in or the dreams that we have for our family. Because to run that kind of a business... that's long hours. They're 14-hour days at a stove, day in, day out, 7 days a week. Hospitality is a really hard business to get into. But talking about hospitality, I still love hospitality. I love having people into my home. I love sharing the food I have and just being with people. So the dream has been for a long time to open up what I call a foodie B&B. So a bed and breakfast where people can come. And that way it's smaller scale food. It's not... preparing mountains of food, and it can be dependent on what people want or need at that time, whether they want to explore the Orange region and its food and just use me for breakfast, or whether they want to eat dinner on the premises. However, that being said, it still is a good couple of years away because it's, my family's still very young, and I need to, particularly now that I have a profile, I need to sort of protect them, and I need to be very wary of those sorts of ventures. So, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask how much it's changed you, but I can smell that. Is that, when you can smell it,
yeah.
Does that mean it's
exactly.
About...
Exactly. So you can see, I actually lifted the pan off a couple of times because the heat is a little bit stronger on a camp stove, but I could still get my hands in there. So it hasn't changed colour at all, and if it has changed colour, you're in trouble because it means you've burned it. But basically, as soon as you can start smelling it, can you smell it out there? No, not really.
Because this middle section is saying no, but the back section is saying yes. I don't know what's wrong with you guys
different
right there.
Senses.
It's the air. It's the air. It's the circle.
So now what we do, I'm going to give you a job. Now what we do is basically stick all of that into a mortar and pestle while it's still warm, because we want those flavours, the warmth brings out the flavours, and go for it. Bash away, grind away. Now, some people like to bang, bang, bang. Some people like to actually grind. I do a bit of both, depending on my
mood. How you're feeling.
But I do want to say that this step, I think, toasting the spices and then grinding them gives you a much stronger flavour and a much richer, deeper, spicy flavour.
So why grinding over stick blending or something?
If you've got a spice grinder, go for it, which is basically like a glorified coffee, well, it's a coffee bean.
But if you stuck up like a blender, does that give the same effect as grinding?
It would, except that I think that you're not going to get it as fine. You need to use something like a coffee grinder that's going to grind it up fine. Because otherwise, you don't want big chunks of spice in your food. They're not. You want it for the flavour, but the texture of the spice is not great, which is why we're trying to ruin the texture and get it down to a powder.
So we're going
to
work harder on the cinnamon, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But what I was going to say is, if you're in a hurry and you're busy and you think, nah, can't be bothered with that, there's nothing to stop you buying the pre-ground spices. And in the same sort of proportions, putting them into a hot pan, that really needs to be low heat, so you don't give a bit of a swish around and then roll. That's it. Or you could even do it without sticking them in the pan. Do you know what I mean? There are shortcuts to everything. However, what you need to realise is whenever you take a shortcut, you are compromising just a little bit of that flavour and the integrity of the dish. So I'm all for compromise when I'm busy. Life's crazy sometimes. You're getting whatever. We just need food on the table. But if you've got a little bit of time, and I also think it just gives a lovely aroma to the kitchen, which is always nice as well.
So MasterChef, while I'm grinding.
So MasterChef.
How has it changed me? Or even changed your family, perhaps?
Oh.
No, I'll just go with a simpler question.
The simpler one. Okay. It's changed me in lots of different ways. I think one of the most obvious ways is I've gone from being a full-time stay-at-home mum to basically a full-time working mum in a very quick period.
Yeah.
My family has coped with that amazingly well, and that's the reason why it continues. My husband is like no other man I've met. There might be another one out there, I'm not sure, but he's incredibly giving and encouraging of me to keep going. He sees the opportunities that it has and he says go for it. And if he didn't do that, I wouldn't be doing it. But so I think it's busy. It's improved out of this world my understanding of food and cooking. I've gone from being a cook that relies very heavily on recipes to someone who barely uses a recipe at all, even my own. I write them, and I'm there measuring bits and pieces because I know it's got to be right when it's being published. But then when I cook it myself, I go, oh, yeah, that's right, chuck it all together, and away we go.
So
you
just your sense,
see a bit of that tonight.
Your sense of how food works has grown. It's the confidence.
It's a confidence thing. It really is a confidence thing that just comes from practice, to be honest.
Now, picking up on the...
That's looking good.
Except so what I'm actually
going to, the cinnamon is always going to be big, but we're going to sift it and it'll pull it out. So keep going. But what we are going to do is we're going to add. Great job.
I was thinking that I'm never going to get the cinnamon. So now I can relax.
You can relax a bit. I'm adding a very generous pinch of salt. Check it out.
Lots. That is generous.
Yeah.
My son would love that. Here's the salt for you.
There's quite a bit of spice there though, so by the time we run it down. And the salt will actually help, because we're using salt flakes, it'll actually help to grind down, because salt's quite brittle. It'll help to grind down the spices a bit more.
So what else, why do it with the salt as opposed to just throw it in any old time? Like why not grind the salt with the spice?
Because the salt helps it to pulverise.
Because of the grinding.
Yeah. But, I mean, you don't have to. You can stick it on the meat.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, we're nearly at the point, I reckon, of that being ready. I'll just show everybody. It's still reasonably coarse. You could keep going, but because, you know, we don't want to spend all night.
Because I'm slow.
Grinding. We can now just tip it through a sieve, and we'll get as much as we can. That's a very fine sieve, so we may have to grind a little bit more.
You want to grind a bit more first?
Oh, no, go for it. We'll see what we get out of it. Now, this amount of spice will probably go with slightly more meat than what we've got here. Yeah, see, it's coming out beautifully. So then what you can do is tip that back in and then just grind that a bit more.
Okay.
Yeah. And basically all we're going to do is we're going to rub the meat with oil and then roll it in that spice mix and fry it off. So easy.
Now, I want to pick up another MasterChef thing. The thing that kind of brought you to prominence as a Christian in that context was an episode that involved the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Sure. I guess for me as a Christian, I went into the show like MasterChef thinking, well, it's reality TV. They want real people. I'm real. To be honest, I didn't think that actually ever take me on. But anyway. And so when it came time for the Dalai Lama, everybody on set and the house, they all knew that I was a Christian, but I don't know that they, well, I think in their words, they probably think I never thought she'd go that far. because what happened was we had, the night before we were cooking for the Dalai Lama, the night before we were cooking for the Dalai Lama, there was a meeting just to talk about the protocol. So we arrived in Melbourne, we were given the challenge, well, we weren't given what we had to do, but we were told we were going to be cooking for the Dalai Lama, and then there was a meeting to discuss protocol. Because as you can imagine, he has quite a tight schedule, and there are some really important, I suppose, elements of protocol in dealing with him. And so it became pretty obvious in that he was to be referred to as Your Holiness. So this was a bit of an issue for me because as a Christian, I don't think that any human being is holy in and of their own right. My understanding of holiness is that somebody who is perfectly right with God and before God. And none of us can actually do that by ourselves.
So you don't think there's only holy men, like the Pope's not holy, or
no, I don't
Buddha
believe the Pope's
wouldn't have
holy.
Been holy back
no,
then.
I don't believe there are any holy
people. So you're kind of ruling everyone
people.
Out.
Yeah, absolutely, except for Jesus, because Jesus was God himself. And the Bible teaches us that Jesus was holy. So I found myself in a little bit of a predicament when they were requesting me to call him Your Holiness. So in this meeting, I simply said to them, they asked a question, and I said, look, I'm a Christian, I can't really call him Your Holiness, but I do want to show him respect. Is there something else that I could call him? And the lady said to me straight away, she said, oh, yeah, you could call him the Dalai Lama, that wouldn't be a problem at all. And so I didn't really think twice about it. I just called him Dalai Lama. And because in the MasterChef House situation, we don't get newspapers, we don't get free-to-air TV, you're kept quite isolated. I actually didn't really know that there was any discussion of it in the community. And I was quite surprised, actually, that people were that observant to have realised, just from watching the show, that everyone else called him Your Holiness and I called him Dalai Lama. So, you know, thumbs up Australian public. But yes, there was then quite a debate, I suppose, in the community, and that was largely sparked not so much from the show, but actually from a newspaper article. Yeah. There was a journalist in there for that challenge with us, and at the end of it, she was coming around and talking to us all about our experience. And I had said to her, she'd asked me why I didn't call him Your Holiness, and so I explained to her, and we had quite a discussion, so that is what ended up in that newspaper article, and therefore lots of other people picked it up.
And she contrasted you with a few prominent Christians who had called him Your Holiness as well, which kind of just really emphasised either your arrogance or your bravery or your stand.
And I think there is a very divided view. I think some people definitely thought that I did the wrong thing, that it was disrespectful. I remember watching a program of Can of Worms, and it was funny because we were right in the middle of filming the finale and we didn't normally get free-to-air TV, but they'd moved Michael and I to a unit rather than being in that big house just for that final couple of weeks. And our house coordinator said, if you don't tell, I won't tell. So we were watching TV. And so, and now you're not allowed to tell. And I was lying in bed one night, literally about to go to sleep, turn the TV on, was just like, Kate Brett, should you call him Your Holiness? I was just like, oh my goodness. And yeah, most of the audience said I did the wrong thing. But to be honest, that doesn't really bother me. I need to be true to who I am, and I'm only answerable before God. So that, but yeah, that's my view on it. And I understand and appreciate that people will disagree, just as they will disagree on lots of other decisions I make in life, and probably disagree with lots of decisions you make in life. But for me, that was an important one to stand by.
Okay, now do we need to get a wriggle on here?
We do. So what we're going to do, I'm going to heat the pan up, because when we cook meat that they tend to cut, it's good to have the pan quite hot beforehand, because what we want to do is we actually want to sear the outside of the meat. That's actually where the meat starts to caramelise, and that's where the flavour is. There's been some discussion over years about it being sealing in the juices. It actually doesn't seal in any juice, but what it does is adds flavour. Pets of Blumenthal does a fantastic experiment where he puts two pieces of meat. One of them, he puts them between two glass plates and stands on one of them and shows all the liquid coming out of it to show that the serum doesn't actually lock in the juices. Anyway, Pets is a bit out there. Anyway.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is just cover that with oil. Sorry, you probably can't see very well. And then I'm just going to sprinkle this one on the top. Nice job, Glenn. And rub it in. I'm all about using my hands when I cook. I kind of feel like that's why God gave them to us, so we might as well enjoy them. So, and then we do the same. Now, I've got quite a bit of oil on that plate already, so I'm not too worried about adding any more, but I will add a bit more spice on that other side.
Now, you're using lamb back straps.
I am using...
Which are, you know, a bit of a fancy lamb. I hadn't even heard of them until, you know, MasterChef, you know, and I grew up on a, you know, farming property.
Yeah, obviously not a sheep.
So what's good about backstraps and why should I fork out my cash if I was going to...
So there's two main types of meat, what we call primary cuts and secondary cuts. This is a primary cut, meaning it's one of the muscles that are less available. There's less of it per animal, and it's also very tender, so it needs short cooking time. Secondary cuts are those big muscles that do lots of work. They have lots of sinew through them, so they need slow cooking so that sinew can break down.
So your roast shoulder or your roast leg is actually a big muscle that does a lot
of
work.
That's right.
So the roast lamb is then slightly, in a sense, overvalued. You know, like it's kind of a thing with
a leg of lamb.
Like
a leg of lamb.
Like, but not overvalued in terms of money.
Meal, but it's
isn't it? Okay.
I like to use lamb backstrap. It is a little bit expensive, but it's very quick and it's very tasty. The other thing you could use is cutlets, which is basically the same muscle but just with the bone on it.
Okay.
So, but basically it's a good one to use because it's quick. There is nothing to stop you, though, doing a spice rub like this on a lamb chop. Like it would be the same problem, same thing,
okay.
Same flavour. Okay, so there's already oil on there. So basically I'm just going to... I'm actually going to add a bit more spice because a lot of that's gone off into the oil. And I love it spicy. We've got it there, might as well use it. So basically we just put that... The rule with meat is you always put presentation side down in the pan first and it should sizzle. If it's not sizzling, pull it out. The pan's not hot enough. Now, because it is a tender cut of meat, we need to be careful that it doesn't overcook. And the way that I like to do that is to turn it regularly. So about every minute or so, I'll turn it until it gets to a point where I think it's done. Now,
which is called roast.
Yeah, with lamb,
what
the ideal is roast because it's pink.
You mean, but you can't—that's the colour inside.
Yeah, so beef. We tend to say it's rare, medium, well done. With lamb, you generally just want it roast or rosé if you want to be, Frenchy, fancy.
And you know that it's going to be rose inside either from the feel of it, the way of beef, or is it because the length of time you've got to guess well?
Okay, no, it's more to do with, for me, it's to do with feel now, but that's taken some time to get to. I used to always overcook lamb and meat and beef. I still do occasionally, you'll be pleased to know. You know, you get distracted, you walk away, come back and go, missed it. But what I say to people is really, it's just a matter of practice. So when you're learning, I would say just keep feeling it. So if you come over and feel that now, you can feel it's really quite squishy on the inside.
Yeah,
you can feel the crust forming on the outside from the spices. And the reason that we're going to turn it is so that doesn't burn, because the spices will burn if we keep. So every time we flip it, these spices on the top now are cooling down and getting a bit of a rest from the heat. We'll flip it again, we'll give the other side a rest. So the trick with this, I suppose, is to not burn the outside, but to cook it through.
Is that a rule of thumb of cooking with meat and spices to keep the turning happening?
The spices are on the outside.
They burn.
Spices can
just
burn.
Just because they're small.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
But the thing is, when you're learning, I would just say keep feeling it so that you're actually educating yourself all the time about how it feels. But if you think it's done, there's nothing to stop you just cutting it open and have a little look. You know, just while you're learning, cut it open, have a look. If it's still raw inside, keep going.
Right.
You know, I think it's better to try and think of it as teaching yourself rather than just do complete guesswork and go, oh no, I failed again, I got it wrong again.
Yeah.
But also go and engineer yourself. You know, it takes time. These chefs, some of these chefs like Matt Moran and other amazing ones, can do it almost from the sound. You know, they've got their back to it, they're doing something else, and they hear it and they go, yeah, done, out. I'm not like that yet, I'm still quite away.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to come back to something which I thought you said you define holiness as right with God.
Yep.
But when you come to think of God as holy, yep. I mean, what does it mean in that? So that's almost from a human point of view.
Yes.
Someone holy is someone
yep.
who could connect with God and there would be nothing impeding yep. the relationship.
Yep.
That would know him like Jesus knew him.
Yep.
But when it comes to God himself, what...
So God himself is perfect, basically. All his ways are right and just. There's a lot of talk in the Bible about justice. And God is the epitome of justice. So it doesn't mean that he never gets angry. But when he gets angry, it's for the right motivations. It's not because everything's going wrong in my life and I'm just annoyed. It's actually because people are ruining their lives by, you know, rejecting them or whatever it is. So God still feels all those sorts of emotions that we do, but his response is always right. His motivation is always right, and he's perfect. It's hard to understand holiness outside of... outside of that relationship, though, I think for us, because for me, holiness is also to do with our relationship with God. We can be made holy, and here we get complicated, we can be made holy because what has happened is we basically, as humans, we reject God. Our natural inclination is to go, no, I want to do it your way, I want to do it my way. And that's our natural inclination. And so the only response that God has for that is, okay, go do it your way. But there is a consequence for that. And that rejection of God is what Christians call sin. I don't think about sin as the bad things we do. They're sort of the side effect. Sin is actually our fundamental rejection of God. And we all do it. We all think we don't want to have anybody else that's in control over us. And so... what happens then is that God has to reject us. He's not going to force himself on us. And I guess that's why Christians talk about the punishment.
Can I pause you there?
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like, we've rejected him, we're not in a relationship, but it does sound a little bit when you say he has to reject us, a little bit like he stomped his foot.
Yeah.
And said, well, if you're not going to play in my backyard, you know, you're not going to be my friend, I'm not going to let you play in my backyard.
Yeah.
So, it's
a bit the same as some people, I think, sometimes think, why does God want everybody to love him?
Yeah, he's got some ego problem. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Is he not a big enough God that he needs the bling of love?
I think the issue is not so much, it's not at all anything to do with him arrogant or needing his ego to be fed. What it is that God wants us to know actually who he is. And when we take a step back and we look at who he is, he's the God who made the universe. He's always existed. He always will. He's created us in his image to be in relationship with him. That's why he created us. And so we need to recognise that our natural inclinations go stuff you. And it's a bit like, I sometimes think it's a bit like, for those of us that are parents, we want our kids to know us and to love us. Not because we need an ego trip, but because we want them to know that they are loved, that we want the best for them. And it's a similar thing with God. He wants us to know him and to love him because we will then understand how much he loves us and how much he knows us.
Yeah. So you're kind of capturing then, it's almost as well, if the parent is a wise and good and loving parent, the better the child understands them, I guess the better it is for the child.
Yeah,
if the parent is wise. Parents are never going to be perfect at it, but
God is.
Okay.
And that's, I think, where it comes in, and that's where we come back to holiness. God is perfect. He does that perfectly, and that's what holiness is, my understanding of. Now, we are getting very close. Yeah. You can see the crust forming.
Yeah, you can, and it's smoking.
And it's smelling. Can you smell it now? Oh, good. Okay. And I can feel in there, a glass of lamb. You can feel that it's starting to get a little bit.
Yeah, it's getting a little less.
And because it's browning quite quickly, I'm just going to turn it onto its side as well, which will just help brown those edges too, because I want those edges to have just as much flavour as the top and the bottom. Then I'll flip it around the other side. And if you've got really thin backstrap, you can just stand there and hold it with your toes so it doesn't fall over. but these ones.
So if you were cooking for a family of your five,
we are five.
How many
yeah,
batch?
Yeah, that would be heaps for
two
us.
Batch wraps would be
yeah,
enough.
Absolutely. Depends how hungry your husband is, I suppose. But I would think that my kids would easily share one of those, but they are young, and Luke and I could share one. Mind you, we are trying to eat a little bit less at the moment.
But I've heard more protein is good, right? Lately. More protein is good, right?
Well, you know, I guess.
More protein is good, right? As long as my wife nods, that's all good.
Right. Okay, I'm actually going to turn the heat off on that pan now.
Okay.
Something that people often forget too is that the heat stays there, and so the food keeps cooking. And the same thing is once I take these out of the pan, which is about now, it's really important for meat to rest.
Yeah,
and the reason, the general rule with meat is to rest it half as long as its cooking time.
So we cooked it for 4 or 5 minutes?
I don't know. I reckon that was a bit longer than 4 or 5.
Okay.
7, 8, something
so,
like that.
So,
so we would rest that for 5 minutes. However, Maggie B has done some interesting experiments where she's rested it for a lot longer than half its cooking time, and it's still great. So really, you can rest it for as long as you want, as long as it's still warm enough to eat. And something like lamb cooked to rosé is, you know, I would actually probably rest that at least another 10 minutes, just because it won't cool down to a point where we don't want to eat it, and the longer it's got time to rest. Because basically resting, what it is you've just worked up a muscle, and you know, when you exercise, your muscles get tight and sore, and then when they relax, and that's exactly what we've done to the meat. We've tensed it up because we've put it into heat, and so now we need time for that muscle to relax.
So true for every meat then?
True for pretty much every meat. Fish is the only thing you don't need to rest, fish and seafood.
I mean, partly you're cooking that so quick. Is that why it doesn't?
Yeah, and it's a different texture of muscle. Fish is very different. But any other meat, you should rest.
Okay, where are we up to now?
Okay, so now we're just going to do a couscous. Now, as I said, the couscous is really just an accompaniment for this dish, and I've partly chosen that tonight just because it's very easy, simple, quick, and easy for them to serve out for your taste test. I quite like to serve this actually just with wilted greens and roasted beetroot, but it would have gone too cold for you tonight by the time they got it out. But that makes more of a dinner party dish, and I would then put a serve of kipfer potatoes or something like that as well, and you've got a yummy. So it's the same thing, but you can make it a midweek meal if you just use your pre-ground spices and just couscous. Or you can make it a dinner party meal, go to a little bit of extra trouble with your spices and slightly different veggies, and you've got something a bit different. Now with couscous, we generally need the same quantity of liquid as we do of couscous. And I'm going to need a bowl for couscous. So what we'll do... I don't actually think we need to rinse it because the spices are not going to be any issue. So we just grab, I put a cup of chicken stock on there and I'm just heating that up. You can just heat that in a microwave if you want to, very quick and easy. You just want it to be warm. And then a cup, oh look at that, perfect measure, a cup of couscous. And I just think couscous is just such a simple thing. A lot of people cook it and steam it, and that probably is the traditional way because there's not too many Middle Eastern chefs out there, but I just think this is my cheap, simple mum way. And then, so what we're going to do is basically heat the stock and pour it onto there, and then stir it with a fork occasionally until it's absorbed it all, and then that's done. And then we're just going to stir through some red onion, some parsley, some lemon zest, and some preserved lemon. And that's it, done.
Yeah, tell us how to make preserved lemon.
Well, how about you chop onion?
I'll chop onion. You tell us how to make preserved lemon.
Preserved.
So this is finely diced, is that?
You can do diced, you can do sliced. I think the guys tonight have done sliced, so how about you do sliced?
Okay, done.
So very fine sliced.
Very fine.
That was something I learned on MasterChef. Is it fun?
Wasn't that one of the tests, wasn't it? You had to do something really fine, like julienne.
Yes.
Cucumber or something, and
if
it was less than a matchstick,
you
were out.
Little rice paper rolls and everything inside had to be very tiny. And I had the worst head cold I've probably ever had that day. I couldn't smell, couldn't taste. I had tissues under the thing. And anyway, I got through. So preserved lemon. Does anybody else make their own preserved lemon?
See, I told you. Okay. It's an exotic ingredient.
It is, but it's...
Oh, we looked at the recipe and went...
It's so simple. There's lots of different ways to be very thin of doing it.
Very thin. That's too thick.
Thank you. She's my quality control lady.
Well, don't worry, you're not tasting this. I'm getting this part.
You're okay.
So, preserved lemon. Is anybody eating preserved lemon? Yeah, okay, thank you. It's what I love about preserved lemon, it's very salty. It adds just this hit of salt, but it's also got the sourness of the lemon. And when we cook, and what I learned from the judges very early on, is that you're looking for that balance of flavour, which is that sweet, sour salt. So preserved lemon, add a big hit of salt and a little bit of sour, and so it's quite good. So that's come to a boil. I'm now just going to pour that chicken stock into there. Now, the better the chicken stock, the better the couscous. Using a packet one is fine. If you've got a homemade one, it's going to be even better. So we'll just now wait. You can see that it looks quite liquidy. But what we'll find is that in the next few minutes, they'll just soak all of that up. And then we'll stir everything else in and we'll be nearly done.
Now, the back of my couscous packet says just do it in a saucepan. Like,
yep.
It doesn't make any difference.
No, you can.
It doesn't matter whether it's fast or slow in terms of absorption. That's still too thick, isn't it?
No, I mean, some people say to steam it. I think traditionally the way to do it is to steam it rather than do that. But this is mum, I do that. To me, it's still tastes just as good. So you can see it's already starting to absorb it. So this is where, if we stir it with the fork, it just doesn't get quite so clumpy. And we're going to talk about something. Preserved lemon. So preserved lemon basically is cutting up, if you've got a lemon tree, it's the perfect thing to do with them. Cut up, I don't know, a couple of kilos of lemons into quarters and get a big bowl of salt, just table salt. And basically you massage salt into the lemon, you squish them into the jar and you want them to be in quite tight. You can put in things like bay leaves or cloves or anything else you like that's got that sort of flavour. And basically you just jam them in as tight as you can. You can then top it up with lemon juice if you want to, but I actually don't. I just jam them in and then you close the lid and you seal it. It's best if it's a sterilised jar because then you sit it on your pantry shelf somewhere in the dark for 3 months and when you come back, voila.
Does it have to be filled to the brim like vacuum, like so that the liquid gets squeezed out so there's no air in it?
No, it doesn't have to be vacuumed, but it's better if they're tightly packed in. Okay. And what happens is basically the salt brings out the lemon juice. And it softens, the acid then softens the rind. So when you eat preserved lemon, you're actually eating the rind. You're not eating the flesh, and the flesh gets discarded. But yeah, you need time, obviously. You need 3 months up your sleeve. But it's actually a really simple process.
So not on the knife.
And it's a great one for kids to be involved in, because it's so easy for them to do. Just make sure they haven't got any cuts on their fingers.
Okay, so rough chop that.
Okay, roughly chopped an onion.
Well, it's sliced, I can rough chop it.
Oh, okay, whatever. Doesn't really matter.
I'm just worried about this front row now. I feel like I'm under pressure.
I personally am a little bit in love with my mandolin. A mandolin is like a long slicer, and you put a guard on, and then you just go back and you can get it like a paper thing. And to me, that's the best way. Now, you can see here with our couscous that it's now sort of absorbed all that liquid. So now what we're going to do is we're just going to add a glug of oil. And again, a really good quality oil if you've got it. If not, just whatever's in your cupboard.
Is quality of oil just by the price? Is price an accurate
thing? No, I wouldn't know. Price is not always an accurate thing. Olive oil in particular, it depends a lot on your personal taste. Some olive oil is really grassy, is how they describe it. And some people love that. I find I don't like it really, really grassy. Others are a bit sweeter and others are blends. So Maggie Beer does an olive oil where she blends lots of different types of olive oil until she gets the flavour she likes. So really, it's actually more about your palate and what you like. Your classic supermarket olive oils are normally very bland. They don't have much flavour. So they're fine to use, but if you want it to have an extra flavour, buy one from a food shop or from a local farmer's markets or something like that, and you'll find that there's a big difference. But again, it's down to preference. There's one that's produced locally in Orange that everybody was raving about and I bought it and I actually just didn't like it. So it's still on my shelf. But I bought others that are also locally produced and I love them. So it's just personal taste. We're also going to add a squeeze of lemon juice. So we're basically creating like a little vinaigrette in there. And like all good cooking, another generous pinch of salt. Probably going to die of heart failure at the age of 60, but I'm going to enjoy life until I get there. No, actually, my husband and I I've just been talking this week about, okay, we have to start exercising, we have to stop eating so much. I just like my food. So basically now we've got a basic couscous. So to me that's got enough flavour to serve. You could serve that with a lamb curry or a beef curry or a chicken curry or anything like that. But if you add these other things in, you get a whole lot more. That's actually quite a lot of onion for that quantity. Yep. I would probably put in half of that. And then we're just going to add that preserved lemon. My goodness, they say messy cooks are good cook, but jeez. I'm just going to get
with the pressure.
The pressure, the pressure. You haven't got a big orange clock. What are you complaining about?
Well, like I said, we've only lasted half a week.
So basically the preserved lemon, when you pull it out, it looks like this. So it still looks like lemon, but the rind just peels away so easily. Do it again. I just slip my thumb under it and it peels away. That part we can't use, although I'm sure it would have to be some use for it. And what we do with this one is we then just slice it. Now, the big thing with preserved lemon is you don't want big chunks of it. You want it to be fairly finely sliced or chopped. This knife's not that sharp, but anyway. And then we just throw that in. And then I always like to add fresh herbs to just about any dish I cook, because I just think there's nothing like that. It just makes it fresh, makes it look fresh, makes it taste fresh. So with this one I would use parsley. You could change it, you could use mint, you could use coriander, depending on what else you're serving it with. And this couscous, of course, could just be chilled down and served as a salad. You could throw tomato through it, you could throw pine nuts through it, you could stir your lamb into it and just have it all as one salad like that. So then a little bit of parsley. We've recently moved house. We bought 50 acres on the outskirts of town, which I'm quite excited about, but there's not a herb in sight. And I've gone from having this lush herb garden where I just go out every day and pick what I want to having nothing. So, some work to be done. Back to buying herbs at the supermarket. And that's basically the couscous. So you can see it looks pretty, it's got good colour, got good flavour. Something they chefs always say is to taste it. And the reason is, I don't know if you want to taste it to see, I'd actually put more lemon in. I could barely taste the lemon, and I like it quite lemony. I won't use the same end of that fork again. Just because I'm looking after you.
Yeah.
All right, should we clear away a bit of this mess?
Yeah.
And then we'll serve that up there. So what I'll do is I'll show you how you can serve it a little bit more. Tonight we're just slicing it. Like if you want to serve it as a bit of an hors d'oeuvre thing, you can just slice it thinly. Ooh. But what I like to do is actually just slice it on an angle. And this is where I really hope it's good. Beautiful. So we've got a beautiful rose colour in there, and it's just cooked. If we kept cooking it, you know, my dad would love that because he loves everything cooked well done. But for me, that's perfect. So if I was going to put that on a plate, which I don't have, you know what? We're going to use the board. Oh, why not? Let's use the board. So you can just stand it up in some interesting fashion. And put your couscous on the side, using whatever implements you can find.
It was your list of implements. We could have got more.
It was my list of implements. I'm to blame completely. So you could even do it as a bit of a share platter for a barbecue, and just take that out like that. Bit of parsley. Done. Spiced lamb and couscous. Very easy. Do you reckon you could do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So simple.
Beautiful. Easy.
Excellent.
Well done. All right.